Hi there, and welcome to the Engage Customer Podcast, where you'll discover the latest insights, opinions, and trends within the industry. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Salesforce, the world's number one service platform. With Salesforce, you have a 360-degree view of your customers, empowering agents and making interactions easy for your customers. The result? Deeper customer relationships built on intelligence, empathy, and trust. Visit sfdc.co/customer-service to find out more.
Today, our editor, David Craik, is delighted to be joined by Andrew McGuigan, Worldwide Customer Service Strategy Leader at Microsoft and presenter at our 2019 Future of the Contact Center conference. Andrew is a senior strategic leader specializing in contact center operations with an outstanding record of delivering demanding targets and significant change in challenging, complex, and fast-paced environments. Andrew has been working at Microsoft for the past 2 years.
Thank you for helping us with this article and with the podcast. And it comes really off obviously the back of your talk at the conference. I'm just interested in talking through some of the topics, issues that you raised there. Just first of all, I think you started off by talking about a growth mindset and a change of culture at Microsoft. Can you maybe just talk through perhaps what you meant by growth mindset and when you began that adoption at Microsoft?
Yeah, sure. So growth mindsets, based on the work of Carol Dweck, and it's a book of the same name, so Growth Mindset. It's really accessible and it's a fascinating read. So I'd recommend it to people to take a look. And my personal take on it is that when we approach something, a situation or a task, we bring with us our previous experience, our judgment, and our preconceptions. And that can be really useful sometimes because it can fast forward us through whatever it is that we're trying to do. But actually, sometimes it can also stop us from exploring new options. So there's two mindsets that are explored in the book. One is fixed mindset and one is growth mindset. So in a fixed mindset, it's where we kind of shut out the new a little bit and run with what we think we know. And growth mindset is where we're open to new ideas and see broader opportunities. And that changes our approach to success criteria and what we think great looks like. So growth mindset for me is about lifelong learning. And that's really what I was trying to say in my presentation. It sort of lifts the burden from you to be expected to know everything. And it places a different obligation on you to be curious about things. And if you don't know, to accept that and to go and find out and to learn. So fixed mindset also kind of drives this tendency in us to want to be seen to be right, to be correct, to know things. And that can make us avoid challenges or new situations because that puts us in a place where we don't know and we're exposing that to other people. But a growth mindset says, I don't know that. I want to go and find out. Let's go and explore it and see how I can learn and grow as an individual and change some of my previously held beliefs. So it changes how you see challenge. In a fixed mindset, challenge is something that can be concerning. And in a growth mindset, challenge is something that you can embrace because it's an opportunity to learn and grow. We all operate in those two mindsets at different times. And I think the challenge is to take a look at your own thoughts and behaviors and understand whether you're operating in a fixed mindset or in a growth mindset at any particular point in time and to try and change towards growth.
And this began at the corporate level at Microsoft, and then was trickled down to the rest of the team. Can you talk about that?
So I've been with Microsoft for 2 years now, just over 2 years, and the business was well on its way to a growth mindset, and it was adopting that language, that philosophy, that approach. It had been driven by our chief executive and his team before I joined. So I joined when that transition was well underway. But effectively, as Satya took over chief executive role of the business, he drove this kind of shift in mindset and worked with his team, who then worked driving growth mindset across the whole of the organization. So it is something that's genuinely talked about across the whole of the organization now. So people approach approach their roles and business in that way. And it's really great, actually. It opens up a lot more opportunities and some really interesting conversation.
Grand. And how did you begin to implement this in the customer service and contact centres, and why did you think it was important that it came to fruition in those areas as well?
So it's important everywhere, and as I said, the journey towards this started before I joined the organisation. So I'm joining other people's hard work and hopefully contributing well to it. But it's important at every level. So it's really important that our senior leaders within the business operate with a growth mindset and seek to learn new things and not close down. And it's really important that when we're interacting with customers, we have that same operating mindset. Each of the customers that we deal with is an individual. And if we approach a customer scenario or situation from a fixed mindset, then we might make assumptions about what the customer is trying to do without really listening intently to what the customer is saying to us, and then take... It might feel like it's the right action, but it might not get the customer to exactly where they need to be. Whereas a growth mindset would cause us to listen intently to what the customer is saying, try and understand what the customer is attempting to achieve, and then to help them to do that. So it places much more of a customer emphasis on the conversations that we have. So it's about driving that mindset that says, you know, be open to new. Listen intently to what the customer's saying and really respond to their individual needs.
And how was that instilled practically in the contact centre and in customer service? How was that explained to management and staff there?
So there were a series of training events that have taken place over the last number of years, and that's helped people to, I think, understand the principle of a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, and to understand when they're operating in one or the other. And then beyond that, there are a number of initiatives that have been rolled out across all of customer services and support. So that's a big, broad organisation, and the leader of that organisation and her team pulled together a customer experience framework, which I shared in the presentation. And when they did that, another example of growth mindset was, instead of creating that mechanism and that approach in isolation, it was created and then it was widely socialized and feedback was sought. So instead of being something that was rolled out to, it was rolled out with. So people feel like they own it, they've contributed towards it, they understand it deeply. And that's brought this sense of, I'm bought in, I want to do that, I understand the principles that are driving. So because it's a conversation and people have an opportunity to feed into it and to add value, as well as to question and ensure that they understand, we've had this really great interaction across all levels within customer services. That means that we understand where we're going, we understand why we're going there, and people have bought into and fed into that change.
And this customer experience framework you mentioned it during the talk, three areas: empower me, help me, and advise me. Can you talk through each of those and perhaps what that means for a contact centre and for customer service?
Yeah, so there are a number of different things to say about the customer experience framework. So the very first thing to say is that the customer is genuinely right at the heart of it. So if we approach customer interactions with a growth mindset, we actively listen, we lean in, and we understand what the customer is trying to do. So the customer is at the heart of the picture and at the heart of the philosophy that sits behind it. Then there's those three areas that you talked about. So there's Empower Me, which is about trying to help customers to self-solve. It's about driving customer knowledge and understanding. It's about giving customer the keys to solve their own issues through fantastic knowledge interventions for customers, through really great self-service, which is intuitive to use, always on, and really simple in terms of accessing it and then executing any changes. So giving them the keys to unlock their own issues without having the need to make contact with us. That's about the Empower Me piece. So it's about help set customers up for success, whether they're a corporate customer or a consumer customer. Give them the tools that they need to do what they want to get done. And then there's help me. So help me is about being there for the customer when they need our expertise and when they need our help. So it's all about really leaning into that customer conversation, understanding what the customer's trying to do, and then helping them to do that. And then the bit that adds even more value into this methodology is the advise me section. So advise me is about, once you've listened to what the customer's trying to achieve, then help them to do that, and help them to do that for themselves next time. Broaden their knowledge of products and services that we've got with us. So that might be about, the customer is using a particular product within our office suite, and they may not know that there are certain functionalities that are available to them which help them to get to where they need to be. So advise me is about helping customers understand more about the products and services that they already have from Microsoft and how to use them more deeply and to be more productive, and also about the wider products and service set that we've got, where that's appropriate for the customer's need.
Mm. And again, how did you convey that to staff in the contact centre? Are those three phrases things that they are constantly thinking about, every call that they get, they're putting them into one or either of those boxes? Or
hopefully all three. Yes. So we are in the process of continuing to roll it out across our contact centres across the globe, and we bring that to life through one-to-one, face-to-face training sessions with individuals so that they understand, have the opportunity to engage, ask questions, and make sure that they walk out working, that they understand what it is we're trying to achieve, how we're trying to achieve it. So it's all about then setting our advocates and engineers up for success. So if they know what great looks like, they stand a far better chance of achieving great. And engaging them in that conversation is a really important thing to do, because it does two things. It feeds back up the chain into the customer experience framework, and it helps them to understand what the customer experience framework is. So it becomes a living, breathing conversation across the organization. And then there are another number of initiatives that are rolled out across in order to help get this done. So we have customer heroes program, which is kind of the next evolutionary step of this. So this is all about a principle that I'm really passionate about, so catching people doing it right. So where we get great customer feedback, we recognize that across the teams and across the wider business by calling out individuals who've done fantastic things for customers, which gives us an opportunity to say to our frontline teams, that's great behavior. Where you get an opportunity to do something similar, please do, which is a far more empowering message than the reverse of that, which might be something along the lines of, please don't, here's our policy, please stick to this policy, please don't break the rules. That's a more negative message, actually, that doesn't play well to most people who feel that they don't break rules or they don't do the wrong thing as they're carrying out their day-to-day job. So this whole concept of catching people doing it right, celebrating success, finding examples of where people have done amazing things for customers, and then highlighting those as best behavior across frontline helps keep these principles alive across the business.
And you mentioned in the talk that that these fine creators get a, I think it was a, was it a T-shirt and a letter? Is that correct?
So we give our fan creators a jacket, which is more like their superhero cloak. And with that jacket, they get a letter from my boss that says, you've done something amazing for a customer. You've created a fan. So one of the principles that we're all about is turning our frontline teams into advocates of our products, our services, and our brand. So ensuring that they're knowledgeable about our business and the product set that we offer to customer and how to help customers resolve any issues that they've got, but that they're really passionate about the quality of the job that we do as a wider organization, and that they evangelize about that to our customers, so they advocate on behalf of Microsoft. And the sincere hope is that because we'll do that genuinely, we will turn our customers into fans of our products, our services, and our brand. So that's the principle behind fan creation. And when we find people who have had that kind of impact on our customers, then we send them a letter. We've created a whole inventory of wow moments, which is where Our frontline advocates have done something brilliant for a customer. We capture that. We share that widely, again, catching people doing it right. And we give the fan creator their jacket, which they then wear into work. And people ask them why they've got it. What did they do? How did they achieve it? And it's just about creating interest and difference, but that difference being about customer excellence.
Well, when you mentioned there about customer advocates, does that change the hiring process at all? I mean, are you perhaps looking more for people who have that genuine love for the product, for the company, or is that something which is which you find naturally within Microsoft anyway?
We are absolutely looking for people who have that, who have that reaction to our products, services, and our organisation. That's something that we can bring out in people, but we want that passion and energy to be there to build from. So it's we can help people understand our products, our services, our approach. We can do all of that really great work through the hiring, the onboarding, and the training process. And then as people go live in their roles, by continuing to support them within the business and making sure that they're set up for success. But looking for people who have some of that already, have some of that passion, just makes that whole process far simpler. In fact, my role in our organisation has literally just changed. So I'm now going to be leading a whole piece of work about setting our advocates and engineers up for success. So taking a look at that onboarding, training process, the environment, and the culture that we're creating across our frontline teams, as well as our policies, our processes, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which is there to kind of really simplify the advocate and engineer's life at front line, so that they can actually concentrate more on what the customer's saying and far less on what are rules and policies and processes and how to drive the system. Which what we're trying to do is create an environment for people where they can worry less about system and policies and processes and far more about the customer. So lean into the customer conversation, respond to the customer as an individual, and do the right thing for them, and then the rest of it will just take care of itself.
You also talked about eliminating customer frustrations, worries, perhaps migrating more journeys to digital. Again, can you elaborate on those, please?
Yeah, so we did some work with Mike Harvard and his team from Ember, which helped us create the four-box model that I shared in the presentation. So effectively, the bottom left-hand corner of that is our failure demand. That is the things that have gone wrong but shouldn't have. So they cause frustration for customer, and for me, they cause embarrassment. I don't want those journeys to end that way, or for the customer to have to work that hard in order to use our products and services. So the failure demand box is all about how do we stop those kinds of situations from occurring for customers. So there's a number of different examples of journeys that we want to just kind of heal and eradicate from the lexicon of dealing with Microsoft. Then in the bottom right hand corner, we've got our simplify and migrate to digital, which is journeys that we think customers still need to undertake, and they add value to the customer and also to Microsoft, but they are best service in an online environment. Now, there are two sides to that. There's some where we don't have that online journey yet created, so it's about creating that journey, making it simple and intuitive, and then helping customers understand that that functionality is there through things like Advise Me in the customer experience framework. And then the other side of that is where we have existing customer journeys that are online. How do we make them more simple? How do we make them more successful? How do we reduce the customer effort that it takes to complete whatever the action is that they're driving? Top left, we have digital first. So these are interactions where we've done that. So we've created this optimized short journey for customers that's really simple. It's always on. Customers are aware of it, and they're empowered to just get going and do what they need to do really quickly, and then get back on with what they really need to do. And then the final one on the top right is the wow moments, where there's a journey that's just super critical to the customer, or it's really important to Microsoft, or hopefully both. And there we want to lean in and have a really great conversation with the customer where we're really listening, we're really understanding what the customer wants and needs, and we've got an advocate or an engineer who's empowered to meet that need for the customer. So there's really the effort is remove things that cause frustration and irritation for customers, create simple online effective journeys for customers so that they can just get going, keep going really quickly and effectively, and then when we need to be there for the customer, really being there.
You mentioned they're reducing frustrations. Can you give maybe a couple of examples? Is that transfers or any examples there?
Transfers genuinely do cause frustration for customers and also for our frontline teams, actually. So we've had a lot of focus on reducing our transfers around the estate. So we have been taking a look at our routing through things like our IVR, and we're also looking at our bots and artificial intelligence to optimize the routing that takes place there. So getting the customer to the right person or the right place in their online self-help as quickly and efficiently as possible is really important. So just making that frictionless and helping the customer get the help they need or to the place they need to be as smoothly and efficiently as possible is really important to us. It helps the customer because customers don't feel like it's hard to do business with us. It helps the customer because it's reducing their effort and it's actually getting them back to what they really want to be doing, which is, you know, possibly not driving their Microsoft account or fixing an issue with the product or service or driving their understanding of it. They're actually trying to do something very different out in the real world, and what we want to do is empower them and enable them to get on with that. So there's the reduced effort for the customer, but actually our frontline teams don't like having to transfer customers. We employ people who are massively customer-centric, and they want to own and resolve issues for customers. So it helps set them up for success if we're getting the right customers to them first time, and we're just reducing that effort of moving customers around the estate. So, yeah, that's a great example of that.
In this implementation, have you faced any challenges, or has it been quite a smooth process?
It's actually been a really smooth process. So we've and some of our approach has, I think, helped with that. So one of the first things that I was involved with when I came to Microsoft was setting up one of our very first test and learn centers. So in Romania, we have a small center of a frontline team. And what we did was we went out and recruited very purposefully people who are hungry to make things better for customer, to drive change, and who will be really restless about processes and policies or procedures or system issues that are getting in the way of a great customer experience. So we went out and actively recruited those change makers. And we did that for a couple of different reasons. One, we wanted to train them on a process, get them executing that process, gather all of their feedback, and then make change to the process to improve it, then train them on the next process and repeat the procedure and just keep doing that. So that process is now up and running. But the second thing that we wanted to do was we recruited people that we knew would want to go on and have really bright careers within Microsoft. And actually, if we can engender in that team of people this deep customer focus, this belief that change can happen and make things better for customer, as they move on and up and around our organization, they take that ethos with them. So it helps seed and continue that conversation around the business.
Have you seen any key learnings coming out of those that center? Is that something you're looking to roll out further or to expand?
So we have that center in Romania. We set up another similar center in our head office team in Seattle. And we use that in a slightly different way. So we use that to engage with the wider business outside customer service and support. So with our product and engineering teams, we have a team of people that we call Showcase, who handle live customer interactions just like any other advocate would across the whole of our frontline estate. But because they're so close to our product and engineering teams, it gives them an opportunity to come and see how their products are landing with customers and how the systems that they create for us to manage our customer interactions with are operating. And it's us trying to influence change and upstream design of both system and product and service. So we've had really great uptake from our colleagues across the wider business who've spent time with that team, want to understand how what they've lovingly created is actually landing with customers, and it's proving to be a really rich and fertile ground. So from the team in Romania, we're getting really great insight about our policies, our processes, our training, the way that we're setting our frontline teams up for success. We're getting similar feedback from the showcase team in Seattle, but we're also enabling that feedback loop out into the wider business.
I mean, overall, from this implementation, what kind of benefits have you seen? I mean, are we talking about financial benefits or service levels? What have you seen there?
So I think we're seeing a number of different benefits. The first one that I'd call out is that we're seeing a better customer experience, and we're seeing that through the feedback that we get from customers. So our customer satisfaction scores are climbing and heading in the right direction, and our resolution scores will do the same. And then the second set of really important results are from our frontline teams and the teams that support them. So we're getting better colleague satisfaction scores, whether that's our directly employed colleagues within Microsoft or through our outsource partners. So where we're making change, we're starting to get real traction across our frontline teams and belief that you know, the change is really positive and it's making their lives easier. And then that does translate through to the bottom line. The focus, though, is not about bottom line. So we don't start with a bottom line view. We start with a customer view. So we've just completed our mid-year review, and we're starting our financial planning for the next financial year for us. And we have started with the customer experience framework. So every single initiative that we want to plan in for next year has to be mapped onto the customer experience framework. And it starts with what's the impact that you're going to have for the customer. And then it's what's the impact that you're going to have on colleague. And then finally, it's what's the bottom line impact to the business. So that's the real value. When we're talking about things like customer experience framework across the organization, it genuinely is at the heart of what we're doing.
So it's become much more integral to the whole organization and the whole strategy.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's interesting. Yep. Okay, great. All right. Well, just final question in terms of perhaps of the future. I mean, where do you see this this going? Is this just expanding the work that you're doing, or anything new, innovative that you've got coming up?
So we are taking a look at a number of different initiatives that we're seeking to deploy, and I kind of hope to have more to share about those towards the end of this calendar year. But we're in the way that I was explaining our budget process works. We start with the customer, so we have a number of initiatives that we are just trialing now, where we think we can significantly drive up the customer experience and reduce customer effort. The initial results from those programs are looking really positive. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to share those results in November when I think I'm coming back to speak again.
Okay, grand. Super. All right, Andrew, that's been fantastic. Thank you. Thank you again for your time, for your insights and your thoughts. That's been much appreciated. So, as I say, thank you. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.